So this is the second part of the talk on the same topic, dukkha. One time I was with Debbie and some others, we were organizing these retreats, sound, silence and dance. And there was kind of a 2 days open where non-residential sound, silence and dance in a very strange place called La Péniche, where it was before butchery, where they would kill animals, and we were meditating in this very strange place with white tiles everywhere. Well, anyway, and because it was an open retreat, only 2 days and more easygoing, so there were people who were kind of checking a little bit what is this story of sound, silence and dance, meditation and techno music stuff. And I remember a guy, he came, and so we did a schedule with a meditation, walking meditation, talks and sharing it. And at the end, there was this circle. How was it? How was this day for you? That was the first day. We had 2 days. And so people were sharing, and then this guy, he was really nice, a lot of energy. And he said like, oh yeah, that was kind of okay, but I'm so surprised because I thought, you know, because this is meditation with spiral tribes. So spiral tribe, for it's the people who kind of were part of initiating the rave scene. Yeah, so they're known for that. So he thought, oh, because it was with spiral tribe meditation, I thought we were gonna kind of sit in circle and have, you know, like kind of energy going everywhere and spiraling up and maybe something like, you know, strong energy and flames. And but sitting like this, that was kind of okay. But so it didn't come the next day. And so, yes, I like this story. Actually, I knew this guy because he was a DJ in Belgium when I used to go dancing when I was 18 from a big, it was called the Boccaccio. Like, you know, these dancing places. Anyway, so he was looking for a very strong experience. Probably, I would expect he had some strong experience, maybe with the dancing, drugs and all kind. And he was like looking for something even stronger with the meditation. And this is somehow we can all recognize a little bit why we come for meditation, to a little bit, not maybe at that level, but looking for an experience, yeah? And so now in these teachings of dukkha, is like no experience will bring the end of suffering. We won't find the end of suffering in experience. So that comes, like in the beginning, even if we hear this, we don't understand what it means. It means something very deep and profound that we cannot get somehow. We're not ready for that. No experience, like realization will not be an experience. No experience will make us feel fulfilled, fully satisfied. Then in meditation, we're kind of sitting silently, but we're grasping everything. And that makes, like, as soon as something comes that we like, we want it to last. That's normal. That's what we do always in life. Anything that is pleasant, we want it to last, and we want to reproduce it again and again and again. We want more of it. As soon as if we feel love for someone, for instance, we want to see him or her again. Or I remember for me, like one strong teaching was I've been smoking ganja joints for many years, and weed, yeah, in English. So and after after some time, it was like I really didn't want to keep smoking, because even I had the feeling for smoking, but I didn't want this state, you know, a little bit like half dreamy state. And I didn't want to feel that, but still the feeling of smoking was there. Yeah, the feeling of the experience, because I had attached the idea, I had attached the feeling of what it was before in the past. In the past, it's been really precious at some time. I had some good friendship connection, very beautiful moments of understandings. And so it's been on my path. It's been something relevant and fruitful. But there it wasn't anymore, and since many years. And still the feeling was there, because it had been solidified as something that I want. So as soon as it would come in my mind, there would be a grasping. So when we sit in meditation, and if we watch what's going on, is we're constantly in a push and pull. Push and pull. We don't want this, we push it away. Like a pain comes, oh no. Hopefully it won't last the whole meditation. I hope it's gonna go. You know, there's a reaction. Normal, you'd say. Okay, that's very normal. Yes, it's normal, but it's a refusal of what is. It's kind of, it has a subtle belief that as long as this is there, I cannot reach satisfaction. So satisfaction depends on the condition. As soon as the conditions are like this, I cannot feel the fulfillment I'm longing for. Or something like, as I said, a nice state comes, oh, I want this to stay. This is what I'm searching for. And then we kind of hold on and grab something, and this is not what we're searching for. We block our experience from deepening and deepening and deepening up to, I don't know where, voidness maybe. Then we have to learn on our path to less and less look for experiences and more and more be okay with any kind of experience that happen in meditation, and to not seek, to not believe that what we seek depends on this experience, on the context, on what's happening, on things. A friend of mine that some of you know, Mukesh, from the Krishnamurti Center in Varanasi, he explained that, he says, like, it's like when you meditation, it's like when you sit and watch the Ganges in Varanasi, it's everything. It's beautiful and ugly at the same time. And when you sit there, it's true, you will see the sunrise, beautiful, fishermen throwing their net. It's like there's something a bit timeless about it. Then you'll see a corpse floating of a cow, or maybe rest of humans that has been half burned. Then you may see a dolphin. They often don't jump, but you see their back like this. Maybe after you will see some plastic. There's a lot of them. And maybe after you'll see the flowers, some flowers of offerings from people who were going to pray in the morning. In the evening, some candles floating. So, and what he says, Mukesh, is like, for him, meditation is like this. It's when you sit there, it's, you just watch thing passing, but you don't like react. Oh, I don't want this. I don't want this corpse to be there. Oh, I don't want this plastic to be there. Oh, I want this dolphin to stay. Oh, I want it to come again. You know, oh, I would like that the sun stays like this and doesn't go more up. Or could the fisherman keep throwing this net? It's so beautiful the way that, you know, it's not the way you look at things. So in the same way in meditation, we could develop this no preference. We're not looking for anything to stay. We're not looking for anything to go. This is not what we endeavor. This is not the level of our search. Is not there at that. It's not there. Because we're not looking for any experience. Nice experience, cool, fine. Painful, because pain comes, okay. That's anyway, it doesn't prevent me. I'm searching deeper than that. So now when I remember this and I have a scratch, my head is scratching or something, you know, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. You know, it's difficult or when you have a fly, it's very difficult. Oh, this fly, you know, we all. So how can we meditate when there's a fly just here, you know? That's a very interesting, now I try to see it as a gift. When the fly comes, okay, so this is time for deep practice then. Because if I feel that as long as this fly is there, I cannot be happy, then I limit my experience of happiness to when the conditions are good and supportive. And that's going to drive in the wall because there will be aging, sickness, and death, and maybe more. No, maybe a wartime will come, big challenges, loss of people we love. So then we lose all sense of satisfaction. Then the Buddha was a liar. Because he said that he found a way to end suffering. Okay, so when the fly is there, this is the good time to learn if there's a possibility of being at peace, which means, first, I tell you my technique. Before I can bring back all the memory of, oh yes, I'm looking for a deeper happiness than the condition and this and that, which, as Nicole mentioned, is quite a job to remember all that package. Yeah. First thing, when you notice a fly or any resistance, relax the body. Relax the body. That has to become a reflex. Just relax all tension. And relax with the intention to accept. Okay, it's there. It's there. Okay? That's the first step. And then you have a little bit of time, because if you don't do that, that's going to be a reflex. You're going to chase the fly. So first relax the body, and then again try to remember that what you are looking for is not the perfect condition for meditation. What we're looking for is contentment in any condition, regardless of conditions. We keep this aim very like the star. This is the star that we follow. So no preference about what shows up in our practice, no preference. We have to learn and to remember that we should not prefer something over something else. If not, it's just push and pull, movement, action. I like this, I want more. I don't like this, I want it to go. Oh, I like this, I want more. I don't like this. This is our meditation. It's an inner, always. Sometimes it's very fine. Sometimes there is still, we're quite present, the breath is there, everything, but we're still pushing and adjusting the experience so that it fits what we like and don't like, trying to. So there's activity. So we maintain a certain level of activity, and we can't experience a vaster space, more empty. We can't have this experience because we're busy monitoring what we like and don't like. And the more we can see this, and I'm sure you've noticed, like the more we react to things, the more they come. It's like on Facebook with the algorithm.
if you press like all the time on something, you're going to get more. Yeah, because this is the mind goes in the same way. If you were, oh, I like this, I like this, I like this, then this suggestion, looking for this, oh, I want this, this suggestion, this I want, the craving for this will come more. If you relax with this being there or not there, the desire for it will quieten. Same with the don't want. Maybe it's not like this with Facebook. If you click I don't like, then you will get less of that because they want that you stay with them. But in the mind, if you always, when something comes, if you say, oh no, I don't want this, it's going to come more also. It's like smokers know that, at least those who want to stop. It's like as soon as the idea of a cigarette comes, they were, oh no. I don't want it, I should not even think about it. I don't want to smoke. And we make a big fuss about this small thought that was going to pass or this small feeling. We don't let it pass. We grab it and we keep it and we make it into something. We solidify it and it becomes a big thing. So no preference. If we can practice no preference, then there's a possibility of the mind quietening down because it's not stimulated by this, I like this, I don't like that, I want more of this, I want less of that. No preference, not pushing away anything, not wanting to maintain something, not grasping, as soon as we have kind of a nice state, like this is like the sun of Hafiz, yeah? This is just the shadow of what we're looking for. The nice state is just the shadow of what we're looking for. It's an appearance that gives us a little bit the taste of what we look for. But if we bring in craving, oh, I want more of this. Oh, this is what I'm searching. I want more. How will I do? You know, we bring craving in. We then again, the craving is dukkha. So when this nice state, very pleasant come, yeah. When it goes, yeah. Like on the Ganges, dolphin, okay, body, okay. So I want to read you a saying. From the third Zen patriarch, Sang Tan. And he says, the supreme way is not difficult if you do not pick up and choose. The supreme way is not difficult if you do not pick up and choose. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction between things, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. So I read it again. The supreme way is not difficult if you do not pick and choose. So that's a good news. We just have to be there and to just not identify, grab and hang to something, not push away and not cling. And then easy. Supreme way is not difficult if you do not pick and choose. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction between things, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. So it brings in the idea that there's a world, there's an appearance of the world as soon as there's the slightest preference, which a little bit we can link with what was said in the last talk when the Buddha spoke with his monk, and he said, you can walk in straight line all your life and you will not reach the end of the world, but without seeing the end of the world, then you will not end dukkha. This is another way of saying the same thing. So I would like to keep deepening this exploration. And it may be, first we'll see if I find the words. Also it may be that for some of you, then the concepts that are, well, one needs to be quite familiar with the concept of the Dharma to kind of follow. So I think what has been the way we've been seeing, like the search for satisfaction till now, like we are searching for satisfaction, yeah, deep longing for satisfaction, and we will not find that in any experience. We should keep this very clear, if it makes sense for you. If it does, keep that clear, and then practice from that no preference. But this is one level of understanding. But then there has been other levels that has been introduced by in all the traditions that I want to open up a little bit now. For instance, we can wonder why do we grasp things like this? Why do we cling to something? Why do we desire things so much? Why, if there is deep satisfaction existing, why do we have the feeling of being not satisfied? How come? If it is in the reach of human beings to feel an ultimate sense of fulfillment, the end of suffering, why is there suffering? How come? And one answer that came from the Advaita part, and many, many come from there for me, because I've been very much into this tradition, is from Nisargadatta Maharaj, who said, like, it's because we are ignorant of our own nature that creates the feeling of lack. The feeling of lack is coming from ignorance of our own nature, which is very much in line with some teachings of the Buddha as well. So when we practice meditation, practicing no preference, again, it's not because we want to reach a state of deep peace. It's because we are actually searching what could be our nature. It's not just to experience deep peace again. It's not the search of an experience. We will not be satisfied with any kind of experience. It is the realization that we want, not only the experience. Or when Hafiz said one day, the sun admitted, I am just a shadow. The sun admitted, I am just a shadow. This is experience. beautiful experience of love. An experience of love is just a shadow. It means that there is a source much, much deeper, stronger, maybe true, at least less depending on something in order to exist. So this kind of longing that we have, this longing that when we sit again and again, for some of us here for decades, I see Chris laughing. You know, we sit like this and we don't move. You know, searching for something, yeah? So we're searching not only for a state, not only for a nice state, but more than that is calling. More than that. It's a knowing. It's a realization that will bring about freedom. It's not just an experience. The experience is not enough. It doesn't transform in the same way. It doesn't convey, like realization is experience and the understanding of the experience. So when we practice the dukkha method, because it's just a method, it's just a way of seeing. We're in meditation, anything that comes, pleasant, unpleasant, we don't care. Equal. We don't care. You know, in other styles of meditation, we care very much. And this is very needed. An emotion comes and we grab it and we explore it, we feel it, we give it qualities, we try to feel where it feels in the body, how emotion feels with the body, how it affects the mind and thoughts, the relation. We care about this. But here in this, we don't care for whatever kind of experience comes, because this is, we're seeking to let go of any experience until the end, until as far as we can go. Then we see less and less construction of the self. The sense of self becomes more open, vast, undefined, unseparated, more, less and less my sense of self and your sense of self is different, more one thing. As I said, sense of time changing, affecting, less appearing, less world appearing. And Nisargadatta Maharaj again saying, when the mind is totally still and silent, there is no world. Whoa. What does that mean? So we're looking into that, yeah? We're looking how far we can deconstruct. Not because we want to go and live there. That would be foolish. Wouldn't work at all. And wouldn't be healthy at all. But just to understand how construction happens. When it comes back, when this, let's say, conventional reality comes back, then we are more likely to find the good position in it. We are more likely to be less fully identified with everything of the surface of ourselves. I'm not saying that it is less true. I'm not in the game of more true and less true. We don't care. These are different truths. But one is more constructed and one seems to be more in itself, by itself, where there's not much in it. So this is what we're looking for. The dukkha approach, the approach is not, it's a way of letting go. When we apply this technique, we let go of any grasping, clinging, attachment, wanting to keep, solidifying. We let go of this. It doesn't happen in our meditation. When we are in this practice, it doesn't happen. It can't happen that we solidify and we stop and we grab or we push away, which is the same thing as grabbing, because when we push away something, it kind of stays. So it doesn't happen. It's a way of letting go. But this is, so it could be done by those of you who want and by anybody who want. It could be done in order to experience a sense of peace. And that's fantastic. But here in this approach, it's the sense of peace is fine. Okay. But the other intention is to notice what happens to the sense of self, to understand where self exists and how it exists, and up to where we can go into quietening down, into disappearing, into dissolution. We were speaking about dissolution in the last retreat. Up to where can we go? And this dukkha, which is, it's called one of the three characteristics. The next one is anatta. Next Monday, all the three are related. You can't really separate them. Yet, they bring in different feelings and insights. And for instance, the anicca, impermanence, brings some amount of letting go when we see that something is not permanent, when we have less grasping, less wanting it to stay because it's kind of obvious that it can't at some point. So there is less grasping, but it's, we still, for instance, can have preference. Okay, it's not going to stay, but we still can prefer this over that. Yeah, it doesn't affect that level of our experience. While the dukkha is maybe can bring us into a different avenue of insight, different avenues of insight, and also more freedom than anicca. Because there will be less inner movement. In the anicca, there will be still the movement of time, because impermanence is about time. There's an order. This is beginning, lasting, and beginning, lasting, and yeah. So time is kind of still very present in impermanence somehow. It's about time. And in the dukkha, it's not so much about time. Time will be more, we may have more sense of timelessness watching through the lens of dukkha than through impermanence. And also, as I just said, there will be less grasping because there will be less preference, because that's about not preferring anything. While in the anicca, we, even though we know these things don't last, we still may prefer this over that. And the next one, the anatta, they kind of come together, is then about who is it that is grasping and grasping what, somehow. Yeah, that's kind of the next question that we can feel coming. So these ways of seeing are to reach states of vastness, we could say, or of emptiness. Not because we want to live this experience, but because we want to realize the nature of reality somehow. Well, that can be an intention. We don't have to, but that's a path towards freedom, freedom from misunderstanding. So we let go, using this view, not choosing, not this over that, not pushing away, not grasping. Then the mind quiets down, stops sending new ideas and new desires. It slows down, because we don't show interest. We don't show interest for the content. So it stops, gets bored sending things that just pass and there's no grasping. And then it slows down. And how far can we go? What happens if there is no experience anymore that is sent? What happens if there's not even the sense of the body? That many of us know that in meditation, you find yourself at some point where there is still a sense of awareness, but the body is not found. The breath is not there. It can deconstruct, and then can there be something without the sense of awareness, for instance? Up to where can it go? Very interesting. We can explore this. And so we use this view to help the letting go so that there is no grasping. There is no movement. And that will help bringing in the realization that we hear about. I don't even quite know what it is. But it seems there's something to realize. It seems there's some confusion about who we are and the nature of reality. So, and I feel that this is a kind of a solid way to inquire. There are many others, you know, but this is a solid way to inquire. I benefit from it. Things are clarifying. I can attest for myself that things are clarifying. The more it clarifies, the more question comes, but still. Another quotes. Just to make sure you don't believe anymore that things are real. From Nagarjuna, who is an Indian, if I remember well, that went to Tibet and practiced the teachings of the Buddha there. Whenever there is belief that things are real, desire and hatred are generated. So this is about the grasping, the push and pull. There is push and pull. There is, I want more this and I don't want this, because at the root of this is the belief that things are real, according to what he says. I don't know. I'm just searching. Whenever there is belief that things are real, desire and hatred are generated. Without that belief, no defilement can occur. Occur? You say in English? Occur. Okay. So happen. Can happen. Okay. Without that belief, no defilement can occur. And when this is completely understood, all views and affliction dissolve. This the supreme knower of truth, the Buddha, has taught. So, we can every time in meditation make the process of letting go through using different views. Dukkha is one of many, many, many views that we can use. Many views we can use. We use a view and then we go deeper and deeper and deeper to experience some vastness and silence. And then we come out of this. So this is not in itself very transformative. We will go many times there, come back, and we will not change much. There is a saying, there is an Indian story. I like very much that story. It's a sadhu, so a holy man wandering. very famous sadhu, a lot of tapasya, a lot of practice, and very respected, very important that in India, very much respect. And so he comes and he has a disciple with him, and he comes next to the Ganges. And he sits on the beach, and he said to his disciple, "Can you bring me water? I'm thirsty." And the disciple goes to the Ganges because he's a bit far. And the sadhu enters in meditation, and he comes out of his meditation something like 150 years after or something like this. You know, this is the kind of story that you hear in India often. And he stayed in very deep samadhi for 150 years. And then he opened his eyes and he says, "Where is my water?" And nothing has changed. There's just been a gap and nothing has changed. So I understand this. There are different ways to understand this. But in this context, I understand this as saying, like, the experience of deep peace is not enough to transform. There must be an understanding of the experience. That's what transform. That's what realization means. So we use the view to let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, and let go, and again let go. Deeper, 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 so that we can see more clearly what's going on when it comes up and when it goes down. Then we will know, see, understand, realize the nature of self and the nature of reality.